Thanks, Radio Sports, brought to you by The Print Shed. Visit theprintshedIOM.com today to set up your personalised web shop for your sports club or business.
2 minutes after 5 o'clock on a Saturday evening. Welcome to Saturday Sport Classified here on Manx Radio, AM 1368 on Manx Radio AM on DAB and of course online at manxradio.com. Coming up in the next hour or so, we will bring you a full roundup of the results in local football, rugby and hockey today. Big day in hockey with the finals of the ladies' plate, the men's bowl and the men's cup final, along with the men's plate final as well, following on from the two games that were played yesterday. Even give you the results on those, and Ben Cunningham joining us to look at those games in detail. Dave Christian here to talk rugby. Tony Meppham up next as well, looking at football. Also have the draw for the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup next round, following the first round of fixtures today. And coming up later on here on Manx Radio AM 1368, Rob Pritchard live at the press launch for the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company Southern 100 Road Races 2026. That coming up at 7 o'clock this evening. And we'll also have some news about TT 2026. You may have heard about James Hillier, who has confirmed he won't be racing in this year's Isle of Man TT, but he will be at the event in a brand new role. We'll hear all about that. And looking ahead as well to the London Marathon, which takes place tomorrow, we'll be hearing from two Manx runners taking part. All that's coming up between now and around about 6 o'clock.
Manx Radio Sport, brought to you by The Print Shed. From workwear to corporate wear and personalised gifts, visit theprintshediom.com.
But as always, we will start off with a look at the classified results for today, and beginning with football, we start in the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup first round. Pulrose United 3, Braddon 6, Onchan 4, Union Mills 1, Colby 3, Douglas High School All Boys 2, St John's 1, Corinthians 3, St George's 5, Douglas and District 1, Russian United 1, Peel 0, Maloo 0, Ayr United 3, Governors Athletic 0, St Mary's 8. And we move on to the Canada Life Men's Premier League. Foxdale 5, Ramsey 3, Arden and Druggan Limited Division 2, Moran 2, Ramsey Youth Centre and Old Boys 3, Castletown 2, Douglas Royal 3, and in Arden and Druggan Limited Combination 2, the game between Pulrose United and Castletown was postponed due to the Pulrose United first team using the pitch. Moving on to rugby, Counties 3, ADM Lancashire and Cheshire Minor Conference League, Duckenfield 46, Vagabond 17, the Counties 3, ADM Lancashire and Cheshire Minor Conference League and Cheshire Bowl Final, Hoylake 45, Ramsey 3, and in women's NC2 North South, Sale FC 1861, second 15-29, Vagabonds Ladies 31, and the Hartford Homes Manx Cup between Southern Nomads and Douglas Celts was postponed. And into hockey, looking first of all at the results from yesterday evening, the Ladies Bowl Final finished Vikings C1, Ramsey B2, and the Ladies Cup Final between Valkyries A-0, Castletown A-5. Today's results, the Ladies Plate Final, Valkyries B-1, Backers B-5, the Men's Bowl Final, Backers C-2, Vikings C-4, and the Men's Cup Final, Vikings A-3, Backers A-3, and Backers A winning that 6-5 on penalty flicks. The Men's Plate Final is still underway. Ben Cunningham with an update just a few minutes ago at half-time to say that is currently Backers B-2, Castletown B-0. Bring you an update on that should we get any more news. So let's begin with football. Len and Tony Meppham joining me in the studio. Tony, we'll start with the game you were at today, which is probably the upset of the day, down at Russian United, beating Peel 1-0.
Yeah, totally agree with you, because when I went down to watch this game, when you look at these two teams, they met midweek and it was 7-0 to Peel, and they were 3-0 up, I think, after 15 minutes. But, you know, it was incredible the way things can change around, because certainly in the first half, I would say that Peel had good chances. Russian had a couple, but it still remained at 0-0. Second half was sort of similar, a bit cagey, not too many chances. But when Russian scored, Cadwallader, it was, he got it. What an absolute belter. Hits it with his right foot. He hadn't come off the bench long. and scored, hit it to the goalkeeper's right-hand side, and it absolutely flew in. And then after that, Peel could have had two goals in sort of a couple of minutes, because two wonderful saves by Mark Blair kept them out. And, you know, how he got to both of them, to be honest with you, was incredible, because I'm not being picky on him, but in the first half, anything that came in the air was a little bit suspect, but certainly when it's face on him, he could deal with it, and you know, incredible. So Peel disappointed with that. Rushing absolutely buzzing. Great atmosphere down there, as you would expect on a summer's day. And but sad news came from it as well, because Keith McCard has passed away. And you know, Keith, big sponsor of Rushing Football Club, and you know, McCard's all over the shirts for years. And you know, it's really sad to see him go, because over the last couple of years he sat in his car watching the game, and unfortunately last night he passed away. So our thoughts are with Rush and his family and everyone who knew Keith, because I worked with him when I was a very young 16-17 year old apprentice, worked for his company, and a great man indeed, and never forgot that. So yeah, very sad.
Thanks, Tony. Moving on to the game at the top of the fixture list, then, 9 goals between Paul Rose United and Braddon, with Braddon coming out winners 6-3.
Yeah, and if you look at the halftime score, you probably don't know, but it was 3-0 to Pulley. So what a turnaround in the second period for Braddon. Let's have a look at the goal scorers for Paul Rose. It was Declan McKay with one, Owen Canepa on the score sheet, and Jimmy Lowther as well got a goal. For Braddon, it was Ben Wazza with a hat-trick, and Mark O'Neill got two. And one for Joel Ibanez. Well, we've got a report. It's a good one, so I think it's worthy of reading. We'll see if we can get it up here, because he's got all the details from it. Struggling to find it at the minute. We might have to come back to that one, unless he's come through on text. There he is on text, so we've got this one. Right. Proper cup tie, he says. And as I say, I scroll back, there must be about 25 pages on this one. This was one that spiralled into absolute chaos by the end. It finished Paul Rose United 3, Braddon 6 in the Hospital Cup, but that barely tells the story of a game that flipped completely on its head. It was a slow burner early on. Braddon started the brighter, but Paul Rose grew into it, and after 10 minutes, they struck. They did it in style. The opener came from Declan McKay, and what a finish it was. A corner from the left found him 15 yards out at the back post, and he produced an overhead scissor kick that flew into the back of the net. That sounds special. Paul Rose doubled their lead 10 minutes later, before the break. Good work down the right from Jimmy Lowther, and Dylan Vick set it up. Owen Canepa took over, rolled his man, drove it into the box, and smashed it into the underside of the bar from a tight angle, 2-0. Then right on the stroke of half-time, Paul Rose grabbed a third. Braddon's keeper failed to meet the ball. Lowther showed outrageous confidence with a Robona turn on him before curling a left-footed finish into the empty net from near the touchline. 3-0 at the break, and it looked done. But in the second half, it was something else entirely. On the hour mark, Braddon got one back. A scramble into the box fell to Ben Wazza, who spun and fired through a crowd to make it 3-1. Then suddenly the momentum shifted. 2 minutes later, it was 3-2. Paul Rose switched off. Mark O'Neill burst into the box and finished at the near post. And within 5 minutes, it was level. More chaos in the area. And O'Neill was there. Mark O'Neill, that is. It was a game to force it over the line from 3-0 down to be 3-3, just like that. Paul Rose were rocking, and it got worse. Forced into a goalkeeper change, they never recovered. With 10 minutes to go, Wazza struck again. A calm finish to put Braddon ahead, and then almost immediately, Joel Ibanez poked one over the line from a corner to make it 5-3, and there was still time for one more. Paul Rose threw everything forward for a free kick. Braddon broke. Kinraid picked out Wazza unmarked, and he coolly slotted home to complete his hat-trick and cap off a remarkable turnaround. Full-time, Paul Rose United 3, Braddon 6, a game of two halves, 9 goals and a pure cup madness. And a word as well for the referee, Peter Kane, who handled a tough game with full and real authority, plus standout contributions from Paul Rose's youngsters, Jimmy Lowther, Bow Milligan, both just 16, who showed serious quality despite the result. Well done to Dean for that, and well done to Braddon bouncing back after being 3-0 down and winning 6-3.
Sounds like a fantastic tie, that one. Just quickly, an update for you in hockey in the men's plate final. Ben Cunningham's just been in touch to say it's now 3-0 to Backers B. We're just waiting on scorer details on that. Second half is underway, and Backers B did have a penalty flick early in that second half, but that was saved by the Castletown keeper before scoring their third. Moving on then, Onchan 4, Union Mills 1. Fairly comfortable victory then for Onchan.
Yeah, it was, but Onchan have had some sticky results of late, but today back on song, and Andy Asprich with a couple of goals. Mike Shirley was sub, I think it was, midweek. He got one, and Tom O'Neill got the other one. So, unfortunately, Tom, you've lost out the O'Neill battle, because Mark scored two for Braddon, and younger brother has only scored one. So Mark gets the bragging rights. I'm not too sure I got Union Mills' goal, but 4-1, convincing in the end.
Tighter game between Colby and Old Boys, finished 3-2 to Colby.
Yeah, the way I heard the scoring went, it was 1-0 to Colby, 1-1, then 2-1 to Old Boys, then obviously 2-2, 3-2 to Colby. Haven't got Old Boys goal scorers, but I believe the half-time score was Colby 3, Old Boys 2, so a great first half. Steve Collister got one, and James Galway, I think it is, got two goals for Colby, so, you know, cracking result for them. They go into the quarter-final draw, and Old Boys disappointed.
And Corinthians against St John's United. Corinthians running at 3-1 winners.
Yeah, I believe this was 0-0 at half time. Went into extra time. Bevan Colley scored for Corinthians to make it obviously 1-0. And then I believe Sean Doyle got the second one after St John's went down to 10 players because Rhys Oates got sent off. So it was 2-0 to Corinthians. Joe Quayle pulled one back with 11 minutes left on the clock. But then the big problem again for St John's. They lost their goalkeeper, red card. So St John's were down to 9. And Adam McCulloch, second half substitute, came off the bench and scored to make it Corinthians 3, St John's 1.
And are we on to the final? We've got a couple more left to do in the Hospital Cup first round. St George's 5, Douglas and District 1.
Yeah, 2-1 at half time to Geordies. Kieran McNulty, there's a blast from the past and still a good goal scorer, good player. Johnny Quirk got one, George Kissick got one, and Jacob Elliott got the other. Mac Matthews got his second in two. He's only 16 years of age and finished up St George's 5, Douglas and District 1. Well, Carl, our sponsor, is the manager of St George's. Had to go, Carl. Is it a true reflection of the game?
No. They started really well, to be fair, first 20 minutes. Scored a really good goal, good passage to play, nice ball through and a great finish by the young lad. I didn't realise he was 16. He took his finish really well over the keeper from outside the area as the keeper come rushing out. We just didn't start, looked scrappy, kept going long. And then the minute we started playing football, that's when we got our two goals for half time. And then we came out, the game was finished 15 minutes in the second half. And then you know what it's like, hot sunny day, it just went flat for the last 20 minutes. But in the end, we deserved to win and it's nice to get the result.
Probably one of the most prolific goal scorers in Manx football for a long, long time, Kieran McNulty. Must be nice to have him back in the squad.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. He's so good.
Still fit?
His first goal, he went bursting through past centre back, rounded the keeper and finished it. It was unbelievable.
Right. Bassey play? Sean play?
No. Bassey was working. Sean, he's only played one game this year. So I think Judge played. Judge and Pecker.
Yeah.
They're the last two of the air. Chris will be back once he's get sorts of shifts out.
Right, we'll have to keep an eye on you when you do the draw, that's for sure. But great result that for St George's against D&D, 5-1.
Just coming back to that Colby game as well, Tony, Dickie Gale's just been in touch. So it was 1-1 at half time, and it was Nick Clegg who scored.
Nick Clegg,
yeah.
Okay, no problem.
Where are we up to? Oh, Malou 0, Air 3.
And good result for Air United, and it was all done in the first half. It was 3-0 to Air at half time. Mark Nixon with one, Alfie Scott, two good young players for Air United, and then one really experienced massive player for them, Jamie Callister. And, you know, Jamie got the third. And, you know, it prolongs the season for Air because, you know, one or two people are saying, oh, the season, you know, there's still a lot of games to play. Yes, there is for certain clubs. But when you look at Air United, they've already finished their league programme. So this is prolonging it. We've got the Cal Cup to come at some stage. I'm not too sure if they're in that one. But, you know, great results. And, you know, Air United will be looking to see who they get in the draw.
And the final one in the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup first round, comprehensive win for St Mary's, who were 8-0 winners at Governors Athletic.
Yeah, I think to be fair, it was always going to happen. And down at Colby's pitch, it might have just gone towards St Mary's way a little bit more. On grass, you know, the pitch is good down there. But if it had been at the bowl, I think Governors might have struggled. You know, it's a massive pitch down there. But Mark Wolfenden, he's been prolific this season. He got three. Nathan Pilmside got one. Morgan Beckley, Tom Callow's had a great season. Tommy Fenlon hasn't had too many appearances this year, but he was in today. He scored a goal. And Chris Asbridge as well got the other one. So St Mary's superb against Governors, winning 8-0.
And just turning your attention to the three league games that did happen today in the Canada Life Men's Premier League. It was a crucial day for Foxdale, and they had to win today, and they did win 5-3 against Ramsey.
Well, they have, and it's their top player, Jay Chatwood, who's come up with it. Jay's got four of the goals today. Kwande, I think it is, Sawamba, got the other one for Foxdale. He's a great player. I've watched him a couple of times. He's quick. It's hard to keep a hold of him, but, you know, Ramsey, that's a great result, that, for Foxdale. And if I look at the league table, I'm looking at Foxdale now. That's their first win of the season. So they're up till this morning. They played 19 and lost them all. Or drew three and lost 16. But now they've got one win. It puts them on 6 points. So they move ahead of Douglas High School Old Boys, who have still got games to play. But when you look at Braddon just above them, it's still doable. So, you know, maybe Downton Thomas last night, me, was saying, well, that's it now, it's not going to happen. But when you look at the goal difference, Braddon are minus 36 and Foxdale are minus, what will it be now, 73. Then it's a big ask, isn't it, to get up there. But fair play to them, having a bash, and that's what's good.
And maybe that pressure's gone off a little bit now. Maybe you give them a chance to play. You know, like you say, it's not mathematically impossible, but it's got a sort of air of inevitability around it now, and just make a fist of it and see what happens over the last few games for them.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And I always say, Carl could come in on this one. I think it's always important that your team does well towards the end of the season, because players who are maybe thinking of maybe moving on, you know, take a different look at it. And I think Foxdale have showed some fantastic fight in the team. And Anthony Corkle, I'll be chuffed to bits with that coming through. And when you look at the team sheet, it doesn't resemble, you know, past Foxdale team sheets from last year and even at the start of the season. So would you say fair results, as in, you know, sort of Foxdale, bit of confidence in the team, and it bodes well then for next year if they do get relegated?
Yeah, it does, because like you say, they've got four games left now. Mathematically, they can still stay in it. So definitely a big boost, where you think nobody else has got much to play for apart from the top two, really. So you think a lot of people who they might be playing might switch off a little bit. So it gives Foxdale more confidence to go into that game than to go and win it.
Yeah, I agree. And they've still got a few to play, four league games they'll have to play.
Okay, moving on to Arden and Druggan Limited, Division 2. It sounds like two great games in the division today. First of all, Moran 2, Rams Youth Centre and Old Boys 3.
Yeah, and midweek, Moran lost to Paul Rose, and now they've lost to Ramsey Youth Centre. So when you look at that league table, you look at sort of Castletown as well. We'll come to them in a minute. But Ramsey Youth Centre, they played 22 for 39. So for 42. So they're going really well. But when you look at Moran, they've only played 18 games after today's game and on 37 points. So they're starting to sort of slip off it a little bit. And, you know, if Ramsey Youth Centre could, you know, get it together playing 22, these teams play 27. So there's still plenty of games to play. When you look at D&D at the bottom, they've played 25 games. So it just shows you where the difference has been. But today, Ramsey Youth Centre and Old Boys were absolutely brilliant. And I think I've got a message in from Keith, who's absolutely buzzing. So I think it's only right that we read it out, because he'll get upset with me. But where are we? There he is. Right, hi mate, we will not be, hang on, that's another one, we'll come to that. We just played out of our skin today, and it was really a committed performance by the players right the way through. And it was Adrian Scarabucci got one, Leighton Ballard got two, and one from the penalty spot. And while we're on that one, just to let you know that we'll come to Ramsey later on in the Junior Cup probably, but unfortunately, Ramsey Centre and Old Boys can't field a team tomorrow, so we'll come to that later on. We'll sort that out.
Okay, and just look at the table there. They're worth noting as well. Moran do still have four or five games in hand on those teams above them.
Yeah, they do. But when you look at it, you've got to sort of take the points away from the teams that are around you. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Paul Rose, they're above them. Ramsey Centre above them, and they've lost to both. So yeah, it's still there for them, but all these games coming through now, it's going to be thick and fast. And as we've just said, they've played 18, but they've still got 9 to play now, league games. So 2 each week, it's going to be tight to get all those in.
And the final result of the day then, and we've just touched on this, Castletown 2, Douglas Royal 3, and that pack just behind Castletown, because throughout the season it's been between Castletown and Colby, really, and they're getting hunted down now, aren't they, by the teams around them?
Well, they are, and, you know, Castletown have just slipped up of late, and against Douglas Royal, when you look at Douglas Royal, 6th in the league, but they've got a good team. And it's funny, I was speaking to Bailey Ashton this morning, who's top goal scorer, Douglas Royal, and he had a bit of a party to go to, and he just said, I'll see how it goes in the first half and see if I'm going to stay or whatever. Well, I think he did stay, and I just said, I'm sure whoever's party it is, I'll let you go, because he's going for the silver boot, and I think that now puts him 2 ahead of his nearest rivals. So he got 2 of the goals for Royal. Simon Dooley got 1 as well, but for Castletown it was 2-1 at half time, so it was tight. But Lucas Simmons got a goal and Ollie Lee got the other.
OK, and just the only other fixture on the list today was the Arden and Druggan Limited combination 2 game between Paul Rose United and Castletown. That was postponed due to Paul Rose using, the first 11 using the pitch.
That's
Do
right.
you know when that's going to be replayed? Is that in the calendar
No, we're just
yet?
Looking at it. It was mine. I put it down and in an end, I was hopeful that he might have played at another pitch. But when you look at combination 2, let's just have a look at the league table on that one. It's so nip and tuck in there. It's Paul Rose have played 22. These clubs play 24. They've played 22 for 61. Douglas Athletic have played 22 for 58. Ramsey Centre and Old Boys have played 21 for 56. So it's all to play for. And then behind that is Colby, who've completed there. So there's all sorts going on, but you know, at the moment, there's so much football being played, it's hard to keep track of it, and the league tables are changing by the day. So well done to everyone who's putting the information in.
OK, and just to round off football for this week, we come to the draw for the next round of the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup. Tony, I'll let you introduce this, and then Carl, I'll let you do the honours of picking the numbers.
Certainly will, and it's the Manx Quality Sheds quarterfinals. Now, these games are down to be played next week, but the Ireland senior team have got a game against, I think it's the Liverpool League's champions. We'll just got to wait and see what the squad is going to be. So we'll try and find out from Chris Bass what clubs are going to be affected. And you might play ball with me and not pick any of the players, so it doesn't affect any of them. But we'll see how we go. But Carl's got 8 numbers in the bag. Give him a good shuffle. I'm making sure that you can't see the Geordie's numbers.
I don't know what it is.
Keep your eyes at Simon so you can't see, but it's... It's deep there, he's not going to see them. So, right, the first one out of the bag, please.
5.
And number 5 is Onken.
2.
Number 2, they will play Braddon.
6.
Number 6 is the winners today against Peel Rushen.
8.
And they will play St Mary's.
7.
Number 7. St George's.
Oh, there we go. Right. Number 3.
Number 3 is Colby.
I'll take that out of all them in there.
The last two.
4.
Number 4 is Corinthians.
Against
number 1.
1.
And number 1 is Ayr United.
It's a good game.
So the quarterfinal draw to be played next Saturday. So, as I say, we'll get checked on what players are included. The first one out of the hat was Onken at home against Braddon. Then we have Rushen, the winners against Peel today, against St Mary's. St George's will play Colby at home, and Corinthians have a home tie against Ayr United.
OK, Carl, what do you make of that from a St George's point of view?
Good. If I was going to get anybody out there, it'd be nice to play Colby. We've ran them quite close both times we played them this year. And even there, the lads have come on and, you know, said every time you play, you get better and better, because we've got a lot of young lads, so... It'd be nice to go and give them a game and hopefully get through.
Okay, and those games, as you say, hoping to be played next week, that will be confirmed as soon as possible then?
As soon as we know, because, yeah. You know, just looking at it, I haven't seen the squad. Well, there's, you know, certainly Corinthians could have players involved in it. Ayr United could have players in it. I'm thinking of Sean and Jamie. You've got Harry Best in there as well. Leo Tregurtha, so they've potentially got 4 players. So I need to find out from Chris who's in his squad, because if they've got 2 players or more, the clubs can ask for a postponement.
Okay, Carl, thank you very much for coming up doing that draw. Just one more bit of football news to bring you before we move on to rugby with Dave Christian. And this concerns FC Isle of Man, and the North West Counties Football League have released a statement confirming the outcome of the game with Prestwich Hayes earlier this month. FC Isle of Man have been awarded victory and 3 points for that abandoned game. The outcome has been confirmed in a statement by the North West Counties Football League this morning. In addition, a loss will be added to the playing record of Prestwich Hayes, but no goals will be registered for or against either side. The match between the two at the Bowl on Saturday the 4th of April was abandoned with just under 60 minutes played due to poor weather conditions. That fixture was then rescheduled for 10 a.m. the following morning at the same venue. However, Prestwich Hayes did not attend that rearranged fixture. After this, Prestwich Hayes went on to release a statement of its own explaining its reasons for not taking part in the rearranged game, citing concerns such as player welfare, injuries and travel constraints. And in its announcement today, the North West Counties Football League added that the board decided the match would then be replayed on the Isle of Man today, this Saturday, but the Prestwich Hayes declined this due to costs. And you can view that full statement at manxradio.com from the North West Counties Football League. But that has been awarded a win to FC Isle of Man, but no goals, no goal difference will be affected by that in terms of the league table. I think, Tony, that probably seems like the most sensible outcome to that.
That's spot on, because I was the way I understood it was that the 3 points had been given to FC Isle of Man and that was it. But that is spot on what they've done. That's the same rules as us, is that you offer the club, you have to give them notice of it, which they've done. Prestwich Hayes have said, no, we don't want to play. You cannot award goals, which is absolutely spot on. So well done to North West Counties. Took a while to get there, but it's the right answer. And, FC Isle of Man, another 3 points.
Do you think there was an element in here of the league maybe not wanting to affect the outcome of the table and have made this decision when they know it's essentially irrelevant to both the clubs involved where those 3 points go?
To be fair, the league had nowhere to go because that was the only rule that they could make, is because under my understanding of the rules that we all stick to, is that if both clubs agreed to the scoreline when it was abandoned, that can count. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Now, I'm guessing that maybe both clubs, well, certainly FC Isle of Man possibly, wouldn't, which is fine. That's no issue. But it was just when I heard that they were awarded a 3-0 win, you can't do that. So I'm just delighted for myself, really, because if it had been different, then the rule decisions we've been making on abandoned games have been totally wrong. But that's how we would have ended up.
Okay, thanks very much, Tony. Thanks once again, Carl. And it is 28 minutes after 5 o'clock here on Manx Radio. And we will head over to Dave Christian to look at the three games of rugby affecting local teams today. Good evening, Dave.
Yeah, good evening, Simon. We'll start off, I think, with the Hoylake Ramsey game. It was the final league fixture for both Hoylake and Ramsey in Counties 3 ADM Lancashire and Cheshire Minor Conference. But it also doubled up as the Cheshire Bowl final as well. Fixtures threw a bit of a curveball, and Ramsey would have had to have made two journeys over to Cheshire to play this game. So it kind of made sense to double it up. And fair play to Hoylake and the competitions committee. Everybody agreed. So sometimes good things can happen. Not on the field, however, for Ramsey. Hoylake were off to a better start today. They dominated possession in the opening 10 minutes. And while the Ramsey defence held firm, some early indiscipline saw them pinned back in their own half. And 12 minutes in, the defence cracked. Hoylake shipped the ball wide, and it was left wing Jake McConville who opened the scoring for them with some fancy footwork. He danced his way over the line. Ross Jones converted, and Hoylake even was 7-0 up. Ramsey then had to make some changes. Second row Jacob Cateen picked up an ankle injury after 25 minutes. His replacement Harry Parsons was barely on the field before Hoylake bagged their second try after some loose Ramsey play and some excellent support running. Ross Jones missed the conversion for Hoylake, and as half-time approached, it was a 12-0 game. Ramsey still very much in it. But as the first half came to an end, Hoylake added a third try from a quick tap penalty. That made it 17-0, and Ramsey finally got on the scoreboard with the final play of the first half when Dan Kelly kicked a penalty, which left the score at 17-3. Any thought of a Ramsey revival was quickly snuffed out early in the second half. Hoylake continued with their defensive pressure and then quickly added two more tries to their tally, with Ross Jones converting both. And suddenly the lead was gone from 17-3 to something a little bit out of Ramsey's reach, I think at 31-3, despite the fact that there were still 20-odd minutes to play. There was no joy for Ramsey in the closing stages, though. Hoylake ran in two more, both converted by Ross Jones, that gave them maximum league points and the Cheshire Bowl. And fair play to Hoylake, they came over to the Murrick Park in early January and were beaten there, but they kept their A game for the day when it really mattered, the big final at the end of the season. So that's Counties 3 done and dusted for both Ramsey and Hoylake. Vagabonds Men were the next team to feature. They're in the same league. They were on the road at Duckenfield this afternoon, and Duckenfield needed 1 point from the game to claim the title, and they won that 46-17. So congratulations to Duckenfield. Well played to them. They're deserved winners of the minor conference, and I don't have any score information for that just yet. It was a slightly later kickoff, so information a bit slow to flow through this afternoon. The final game of the day was at Sale, Haywood Road Ground, very famous for Sale before they became the Sale Sharks. So Sale FC 1871 is their full title now, and their second team is in the same league as Vagabonds Ladies, Women's NC2 North South. Sale are the unbeaten league champions. They'd won 13 out of 13 before today, and on average they conceded just 8 points a game. So it was a little bit of a daunting trip, I think, for Vagabonds Ladies, but they took one of their strongest away squads of the season and put in a gritty performance this afternoon to win 31-29. So fair play to them. It's Sale's first defeat of the season, and Vagabonds left perhaps wishing that they'd worked a little bit harder in some of those earlier games that might have just left them in the promotion places. This afternoon, their two stars of the season, at least in my view, are Freya Crowe and B. O'Neill. They both weighed in with tries this afternoon, but the strength throughout the squad was underlined with additional tries from Lauren Ellison, Becky Dunn and Leona McGovern. Skipper Sammy McDonald kicked three conversions as well, and that proved to be the difference between the two sides, just 2 points in the game. The result lifts Vagabonds to third in the standings, but, and that's a big but, it's only going to be temporary, at least in my view. Most of the teams will be playing tomorrow, and Winnington Park are their nearest rivals for places, and I think Winnington Park will just sneak ahead of Vagabonds as they entertain bottom side Bury. But I think for everybody concerned in Counties 3 and in Women's NC 2 North South, I think everyone will be relieved that the season's over. Just one more weekend of rugby left before everyone takes a summer break, including me. That is the Manx Cup final day, which is next Saturday, the 2nd of May. And we've got the Manx Cup final, which will be between Southern Nomads and Douglas Celts. And we'll also, I think at the moment, provisionally at least, we'll have a Manx Plate final between Ramsey and Vagabonds. That will all be with you on Saturday Live next week.
Thanks very much, Dave.
Manx Radio Sport, brought to you by The Printshed. Take your team to the next level with locally printed and embroidered sportswear and clothing.
26 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on Manx Radio Saturday Sport Classified. Still to come before the end of the programme, we'll take a look at two runners heading off to the London Marathon to take part in that tomorrow, and looking at the charitable causes that they are running for. And also that news of James Hillier's involvement in this year's TT. He won't be racing, but he will still be involved in the event. All of that coming up very shortly. Before we get to that, though, let's turn our attention to hockey. And Ben Cunningham is joining me on the line remotely this week, and before we get into results, Ben, let's just get the latest on the men's plate final. This game a little bit late getting underway. It was 3-0 last time we had an update, but I believe there's been some more goals.
Yeah, Simon, there's been a few more goals in that game. It is now Backersby 6, Castletown B 0. We will give you the goal scorers later, because that game finished, well, it started late because the game before it finished late, and we'll tell you why when we get to it.
All right, Ben, let's start off then with the results from yesterday evening. These games both played on Friday night. The Ladies Bowl final was the first of the two fixtures yesterday evening, and that finished Vikings C1, Ramsey B2.
Yeah, Ramsey B completing the double there. Ramsey taking the lead from a free hit that caught out Vikings, and Isla Rusel converted it to make it 1-0, and it stayed that way going into half time. In the second half, though, Ramsey came out strong and were looking for their second goal, and they found it yet again. Isla Rusel getting her second goal of the game, and it looked like it was going Ramsey's way, but just before the end, Vikings found a consolation goal from Kirsty Guy. Could there be late drama in this one? Unfortunately, though, it was just too late for Vikings C to take it to flicks, and that game finished Ramsey B2, Vikings C1, Ramsey B completing the double.
And the later game yesterday evening, the Ladies' Cup final between Valkyries A and Castletown A, also held at the NSC, the Southerners coming out on top, 5-0 winners.
Yeah, of course, Castletown A defending champions, and they remain the defending champions. And I'm told by a reliable source that's now 4 years in a row that Castletown A ladies have done this. So big congratulations to them. Castletown A took the lead thanks to Zoe Shimmin from the penalty spot. She got a penalty flick awarded, which she converted. And then Faith Watson got on the score sheet from a slick short corner, giving the Southerners a 2-0 lead over the Westerners going into half-time. Second half, Lucy Allen carved open the defence and slotted home to make it 3-0. Eden McCubbin got her name on the score sheet to make it 4-0. And then Faith Watson rounded off a great game for herself, getting her second goal of the game to make it 5-0. For Valkyries, though, they'll be disappointed with that game. They've really tested Castletown throughout the season in the league. I mean, we were looking on Friday Sport there in the league when them two sides met. It was Castletown drew 1 and lost 1 to Valkyries A. So congratulations to Castletown Ladies A. They've done the double.
And we move on then to today's fixtures. Early start at 9.30 for the what's been a bumper day at the NSC. At 9.30, the first game was the ladies' plate final. And it was more bad luck for the Westerners, as Valkyries B were beaten 5-1 by Backers B.
Yeah, Valkyries B defending champions of this ladies' plate, and they aren't anymore because Backers B got the better of them today. Of course, Valkyries Ladies B did take the Ladies Division 1 title over Backers B by just 1 point. So Backers were definitely out for revenge today, and they've done it. Ross Lynch with 2, Ella Edwards with 1, Sophie Partington with 1, and Sienna Millwall with 1 for Backers B, and the consolation goal for Valkyries B coming from Andrea Lace. But big congratulations to Backers Ladies B overcoming the Ladies Division 1 champions.
And the next game taking place at 1 o'clock this afternoon was the Men's Bowl final. That was between Backers C and Vikings C, and Vikings C coming out 4-2 winners.
Yeah, and of course, Backers C just pipped Vikings C to the runners-up spot in Men's Division 2. But today, Vikings C got the better of Backers C. The Backers C goal scorers were Dan Stevenson and Christian Davies. Now, of course, I'm off island now. I know when Dan Stevenson scores on a cup final day, there is a certain celebration he does. So if anyone can let me know if he did do it, please do let us know. But for Vikings C, it was James Baker, Jay Davis and Patrick Williams. But Vikings C get the men's bowl.
And the men's cup final, that game at 2:30 today. Now, this finished 3-3 between Vikings A and Backers A. It went to penalty flicks, as you would expect, and Backers A winning 6-5.
What a game. What a game. Of course, Backers A, absolutely phenomenal season all year. They've been undefeated right the way through to this game. And, of course, they do still remain undefeated, even though they drew this game 3-3. However, Backers A take the victory on penalty flicks by 6-5. And I mean, a big thank you to Jules Watson, who's been keeping me posted today, obviously with me being off island. But the first 4 penalties of the penalty shootout, it was 2 saves and 2 misses. So it just shows you how penalty flicks could go. Vikings, though, coming from 2-0 down at half time, just to make it 2-2, Backers then retaking the lead before Vikings equalising just before the final whistle to take it to penalty flicks. And Backers' ace keeper was the hero of the day, getting that save to make them the winners. Vikings' A goal scorers were Archie Cayley with one and Eddie Cayley with two. And then the Backers' goal scorers were Elliot Reid, Jamie Brown and Andy Whiting. But what a men's cup final.
And that takes us on to the men's plate final, which was understandably a little bit late getting underway. It was due to start at 4 o'clock, but due to those penalty flicks, a little bit delayed. You mentioned there that it was currently 6-0 to Backers B against Castletown B. Any update on that game at the moment, Ben?
And the full-time whistle has just literally gone, Simon, and it's finished. Backers B 8, Castletown B 0. And, of course, Tony Bentley Roberts with 3. Ollie Christian with 3, Jack Grimley with 1. We're just waiting on confirmation of the 8th goal scorer. But big congratulations to Backers Men's B. They have done the double as well. They are through, well, they've won the Men's Division 1 title. And today they've wrapped up the Men's Plate Final. It'll be a big rush now for the Castletown squad. Their Castletown Club's awards evening tonight is due to start at 7 o'clock. So all them boys will be heading home now as fast as they can to get themselves suited up and looking sharp for the Cup Final. Unfortunately, my invite, I had to decline because I'm currently in Blackpool. I'll bring you back some rock. Don't worry, Simon.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben. I'll let you get back to your evening in Blackpool. Thank you for joining us on what's been a fantastic weekend there for a fantastic couple of days, really, for Manx Hockey Summit. Great games across those fixtures. Ben, thank you very much.
No worries.
Okay, we're about 18 minutes or so left of the programme. A couple more things to look at for you. And we start off with the London Marathon, which is, of course, taking place tomorrow for 2026. And yet again this year, a strong field of Manx competitors taking part. Those who will be involved from the Isle of Man will be involved for a variety of different personal and charitable causes. One of the Isle of Man's participants this year has the chance to make Manx history at the event. Michael Ryan, who previously served in the military with the Royal Engineers, is hoping to become the first wheelchair competitor from the island to finish the full race. He's been telling Manx Radio why the London Marathon is a challenge he personally wanted to take on.
London Marathon has always been like one of those things I've always wanted to do, like even before my wheelchair came along. Since my 20s, you know, I mean, I can remember watching it on TV and stuff like that. During my time in the army, you sort of think to yourself, like, I will do this one day. Even after I got injured, it never totally went away. You know, it was always one of those things that I wanted to do.
People enter for different reasons. Some will do it for personal performance goals. Plenty, of course, do it for charitable causes. I mean, what are you hoping most of all to get out of the experience?
For myself, it's feeling that I can still do something that not everyone can do, whether you're able-bodied, disabled, whatever. I mean, we all have that little bit of ego inside of us, you know, which is there. But something else which I really like the idea of is sometimes you can feel quite helpless when you've got disabilities, or even if you haven't, you know, you can feel quite helpless sometimes. If somebody gets some kind of inspiration from this, I really like the thought that somebody gets that sort of get up and have a go kind of feeling from it. That would really sort of be a big pick-me-up for myself. I've had a hellish year. Like, I injured my arm about mid last year and it just hasn't healed up, so I haven't actually been able to train a single meter. I mean, I've done hard things before, so it's not like I've just sort of rolled out of bed and said, oh, I'm gonna have a go at this. But I really do think that the crowds, the atmosphere will help. I've got my own mindset, which I know is unbreakable. That's the only thing that is unbreakable about me, is my mindset. I truly believe if I can get to that start line, I'll get to the finish line one way or another.
Elsewhere, and especially for those who aren't involved in endurance events, one question that gets asked is, what are the final preparations for a marathon after weeks and months of training for Isle of Man runner Jess Bryan, who's taking on the London Marathon for the first time this year? She has a very different and exciting 24 hours leading up to the race itself, as she's been explaining to Rob Pritchard.
It's shaping up to be quite the weekend. It wasn't how I originally planned my London Marathon journey to go, but it's actually ended up being my hen party weekend, the same weekend as the London Marathon. My sister and best friend organised it. They were aware I was doing the marathon, but just got a little bit confused with dates. So they managed to bag us some tickets to see Olivia Dean in Manchester. So we're in Manchester at the Co-op Arena watching Olivia Dean. And then the concert finishes on the Saturday night. We get picked up by a minibus and we're getting taken up to London, and then I might get a couple of hours sleep, I'm hoping, to then run the marathon, London Marathon, on the Sunday morning. This is the first time I've entered the ballot for years and really wanted to get in because I'm a very social runner. I've got a great crew around me that have helped me train, and I've heard London is like the epitome. It's that most amazing race for like community and support, so I've just wanted to get in it for years. So getting in it this time through actually our listen, and so I've had a charity spot, so I've been fundraising for them, which is a charity close to my heart. So the weekend has just got so many amazing factors that no matter what happens, what results I get, I know it's going to be a weekend I never forget.
And you're going to be one of plenty of Ireland competitors involved in the London Marathon once again. What do you think it says about athletics on the Isle of Man, that the Isle of Man always seems to have such a strong representation at this?
Yeah, and I guess it comes back to that, like, from my experience, the running community, obviously it's growing and it's growing, but it is just so supportive. The people that reach out and say good luck or think of this, think of that, everyone just wishes everyone to do well. So I think it's amazing that we've got so many Manxies that will be flying the flag for the Isle of Man and get hopefully amazing results.
That was Michael Ryan and Jess Bryan, two of the Isle of Man participants in this year's London Marathon, which takes place tomorrow. And finally on the programme, turning our attention to motorsport, James Hillier has confirmed he won't be racing in this year's Isle of Man TT. However, he will be at the event this year in an exciting new role. The former TT winner will be riding as a double on a camera bike as part of the filming for a new TT-inspired film, with production taking place at this year's Racing Fortnight. Hillier's been speaking to Manx Radio sports editor Rob Pritchard about his new venture for 2026.
It's going to be a little weird. I don't fully know yet. You know, it's going to be hard, certainly watching the races start and not quite getting that same feeling, but I'll definitely probably sleep a bit better. But it was an opportunity I didn't want to miss out. I can't imagine it will happen again. And, you know, I fully intend to be back here racing again competitively next year. But for sure, last year was a bit frustrating. The results were okay on the big bikes. We had a good run on the Super Sport, but not really I suppose it is a bit of a sidestep or a step. It's not really a step backwards, it's just a sidestep. And, you know, I've done 16 TTs, so as I say, this opportunity came up and I wanted to sort of get involved and see where it goes. Stunt riders, that's what they refer to me as, but I don't see it as a stunt. I guess it is in a way. It's a risky manoeuvre riding around this course, but they're quite sort of limited, let's say, on people or riders that were capable of riding around at a good speed with cameras on. That's going to slow it down a little bit, but also I think the experience, I've gained a fair bit of knowledge riding around here. I've done a fair few laps around this place, so yeah, an overall package, I think I can offer them quite a lot. And I mean, it's been going on for almost a year, I think, actually, since I've started speaking with them, but it's certainly an eye-opener. The whole scale of the operation is pretty monstrous, so it's interesting, exciting, and it's never fails to surprise me, really. So far, what I've been involved with, it's very different to anything else I've seen or been involved with before.
Conversely as well, obviously, you, just as well as anyone, know all the financial and time commitments that have to go into getting to the TT, the Northwest, etc. With this opportunity coming up, and I know you said, obviously, there's a lot of work that's already going into it anyway, and there will be more to come, but does it almost take, I suppose, a bit of pressure off your shoulders in having to get everything ready for something like the TT?
Massively. You know, last year, the build-up to TT was not ideal in terms of prep or mental state. It was not ideal for me at all, you know, trying to pull everything together. And I think that opened my eyes quite a lot, which has certainly made the decision to go into this and be involved with this film a little bit easier, because I knew it would take the pressure off trying to put a whole team back on track. So yeah, it's not easy, and I genuinely don't think a lot of the outsiders realise quite what goes in behind the scenes to line up on that start line.
James Hillier speaking to Manx Radio Sports editor Rob Pritchard at yesterday evening's TT press launch. And you can hear more news and reaction from that press launch throughout the week here on Manx Radio and over at manxradio.com. And sticking once more with motorsport, just a reminder this evening from 7 o'clock here on AM 1368 and Manx Radio AM and DAB, and of course online at manxradio.com, we'll bring you live coverage of the press launch for the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company Southern 100 Road Races for 2026. Rob Pritchard will be down there at the event hosted by Chris Kinley with their sponsors and riders and organisers for the friendly races. So if you want to tune into that, that will be on air from 7 o'clock this evening. Thanks very much to Tony Meppham, Dave Christian, Ben Cunningham, our pundits for this evening's Saturday Sport Classified. Also thanks to Carl Gotland for Manx Quality Sheds for helping with the draw for the Hospital Cup quarterfinals. Don't forget you can listen back to this programme very shortly online as a podcast at manxradio.com or wherever it is you get to your podcasts, and sport back on Manx Radio next Friday evening from 6:30 with the Friday Sport Preview. I'll be looking after things on Saturday Live next Saturday afternoon between 1 and 5, and Rob Pritchard will be here in the chair between 5 and 6 with Saturday Sport Classifieds. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. It's 9 minutes away from 6 o'clock, and we'll hand you back to Manx Radio Gold.